guest is Kwaku Mandela, and it's a pleasure to have you here. Nice to meet you.
Thank you very much.
There's an awful lot to talk about with you, and I want to get to a lot of the aspects of the work that you're doing and Me to We Day, but we can't ignore the fact that your last name is Mandela. I want to talk to you a bit about your grandfather.
Sure.
Did you ever feel that in some respects you were kind of sharing him? I've talked to other people who've been in Nelson Mandela's life, and they felt that, and even he knew, that he kind of belonged to the world before he belonged to anybody else.
I think without doubt, you know, I didn't know him for the first 5 years of my life. When I eventually did meet him and get a chance to spend time with him, it was limited. He was the president of South Africa, ultimately, and he was a man that was, you know, in huge demand. I think that's a sacrifice he made early on. He was very clear about the fact that, you know, he was dedicating his life to his people, to politics, and ultimately to changing the dynamics of South Africa. In a sense, I believe, you know, every South African and a lot of people around the world feel ownership over him. And I think that's something, as a family, we've come to terms with. I think if he had a chance to do it all over again, he'd do the exact same thing.
Really? You think if, as a young man, somebody said you're going to spend decades of your life behind bars, but it's going to be for a better world, that he'd say, yeah, I'm in?
I think he would. I think he had this kind of undying spirit, and it was definitely shaped by the people that surrounded him. But he definitely had this spirit to ultimately do big things, to be able to bring about a world where I think a man wasn't determined by the color of his skin, ultimately, but like he says, by the character of his soul.
You, of course, as anybody listening right now, have a northeastern American accent. You were born in Africa, but you came to North America. How did that happen?
So 2 months after I was born, both my parents came to study on the eastern coast of America in New England. So I grew up for the first 10 years, pretty much in Amherst, Massachusetts, Hartford, Connecticut, and a little bit in New York. So
when did you go back?
We went back in 1994, when my granddad became the president of South Africa.
Do you feel that you are an African or South African?
Without doubt. My entire family's from there. I've spent majority of my life, or most of my life, in South Africa. So I think it uniquely shaped who I am. That said, I have a huge amount of appreciation for North America. Not just the United States, but Canada, too. I've been coming here for a number of years, and you know, I've got a chance to see the cities, meet the people, and I'm very fond of this place.
Yeah. Do you speak the languages of South Africa?
I do. I can speak Xhosa.
Do you have an American accent when you speak it?
Not really. I think you change your tone, obviously, according to who you're speaking to. So when I'm in South Africa, I have more of a South African, I guess, tone in my voice.
One of the things that you've made one of the many causes in your life is HIV/AIDS.
Sure.
How do you see that crisis in Africa now? I mean, does it still qualify as a crisis?
Without doubt. You know, South Africa has the highest rate of infections in the world, 12 million people out of a population of 55 million. And, you know, people die from this disease around the continent every day in huge numbers. So it's still a major problem. It's still something that I think we need to educate new generations about very fervently, because unfortunately, you know, new infection rates, as much as they've dropped in the last 10 years, are still relatively high. But I think we've made, you know, huge steps forward. Ultimately, there were only 50,000 people 12 years ago who were getting ARV treatment. There's now 14 million.
Right, and those are the pills that are just routine for any person in a Western country. There's
correct.
Been a big debate whether they should provide them in third world countries.
Well, whether government should provide them and whether they should be free, ultimately. What South Africa has done by essentially creating a system where people take one pill as opposed to taking, you know, multiple pills a day has really helped the situation, and providing those for free has obviously saved a huge amount of lives.
You're also part of something called the Africa Rising Foundation. I guess, you know, my familiarity with what's going on in Africa these days is mostly through TED Talks, but
sure.
It's pretty exciting. I mean, there's a lot of entrepreneurial spirit there. There seems to be a trend towards more democracy, less crazy, and then you end up running up against, you know, civil war, tin pot dictators, and Ebola and everything else. I mean, so I realize it's a whole continent.
Sure.
But what's your assessment of what's going on? And you know, when you look at it, it's called Africa Rising. Obviously, you guys feel that things are on the rise.
Without doubt, we started the organization in 2009 simply for the fact that we traveled extensively throughout the world. And we were always fascinated by the people we met and the questions they'd ask us about Africa. And most of the times, they were common misconceptions. Do you guys have lions in your backyard? Are there escalators in Africa? And so we wanted to change the perception of what was going on in our continent and really focus on youth development, because that's the really exciting thing. you know, youth are buying up blocks of cities and redesigning them ultimately. They're creating new entrepreneurial shops and really tapping into, I think, this new generation of global citizenship. For me, that was the fascinating thing, because that's ultimately what's going to, you know, bring Africa not only into the future ultimately, but bring Africa into, you know, the 21st century as being a modern and developed, you know, continent.
My guest is Kwaku Mandela. He's going to be speaking at the Me to We Day. What do you tell the kids at Me to We?
I'm just excited to meet them, to be totally honest. As I said, you know, I've been very fond of Canada for a while. I think Canada has more to show the world than, you know, Rob Ford, hockey, and essentially Drake. I think the kids of Canada ultimately are really at the forefront. And so I want to explain to them the power they have ultimately to change their community, to change their nation, to change the world. And I think that's the example my granddad showed all of us, and it's something they can take forward.
Do you remember when in your life you realized that your grandfather was a little bit different from other people's grandfathers?
I do. I had a elementary school teacher who had the world map in her classroom, and she would always point out where South Africa was and say, you know, Kwaku's grandfather is there, and he's in prison for the wrong reasons. I started to get a sense of who he was, but I think it was only when I actually went to go visit him while he was still under house arrest in the Western Cape, and there were people lining the streets, thousands of people lining the streets ultimately of, you know, different colors and backgrounds, and they were all cheering because it was the first moment that his entire family got to go see him after, you know, some 20-odd years. And I really kind of saw the scale of who he was and what he meant to people.
When you were in a room with him, were you able to separate things out from this is the great Nelson Mandela and this is granddad?
Definitely. I mean, he always made that effort to lighten the mood around his grandchildren, to find out how you were doing at school. I think four or five times he, you know, popped up in my school and kind of surprised me. And, you know, he'd just shake hands with the other students. He'd make jokes, ultimately talk to the teachers. I think that was the key. He was always accessible to people. And I think that's why people were so drawn to him.
Is it at any time a burden to be a Mandela?
It's definitely got, you know, its pros and its cons. But I would say everybody has a legacy that they come from, ultimately. It's up to the individual to decide if they're going to carry that on. And what's their tradition? What's their culture? What are they going to take forward? And so it's definitely come with a lot of expectation, with a lot of pressure. But I've tried to honor my granddad's legacy by doing things that I believe are important to me.
What do you think the biggest challenge facing South Africa is now then, and Africa?
I think in general, the biggest thing is obviously leadership. You know, we've got a very unique and solid foundation that was laid not just by my grandfather, but by the many men and women who struggled against apartheid. And we now have an opportunity, ultimately, to really lead the way in Africa, but also show that Africa is not this dark continent, ultimately. It's not a place that's only stricken with poverty and disease. You know, that we can be leaders and pioneers in industry, ultimately. But I think we can be leaders and pioneers in democracy as well. And I think the younger generation realizes that. I can't wait till, you know, they come to power. And hopefully, you know, in the next 10 years, 20 years, we won't be talking about things like famine, things like civil war, ultimately. But we'll be talking about great architects and designers, ultimately, and great minds that are coming out of Africa.
What do you think the greatest legacy of your grandfather, Nelson Mandela, is? I mean, you're his grandson, so I'll defer to you. I think forgiveness is an incredible lesson that he left, but how do you see it?
I mean, I think forgiveness is definitely a big thing, but I would go back to what I said and what I'll say to the kids this coming Thursday is that regardless of your background and, you know, my granddad's background, he came from a rural village, ultimately. You know, he was herding sheep. He had no idea of the bigger world that, you know, places like Canada and England and Australia really existed when he was a young man, or even know about politics, really. But regardless of your background, I would say you can change your community, you can change your nation, ultimately. You can have an impact on this world. And I think that's the real unique thing that I think he showed all of us.
I was interviewing an aide to your grandfather, and he said that in his tribal tradition, he may have died, but he's still here. And as a matter of fact, if you defy him, he has the power to make you sick. Maybe,
sure.
Is that true?
I mean, it depends what you believe in, but, you know, definitely in African culture, your ancestors never leave you. I would say, you know, my granddad is here in spirit, ultimately, and I think he's looking down at the world and hoping that we do and make this planet the best it can possibly be.